listening to WAMFLP New Orleans, the voice of the people, on 90.3 FM and streaming on the web at WAMF.org. This is the A Community Voice Show. A Community Voice is a grassroots community group that fights for justice for low to moderate income families. Give us a call at 504-941-2852 or visit us on the web at acommunityvoice.org for more information.
We're here at WAMF Radio, that's 90.3 on your dial, FM. We're here today with one of the most sensational people I've ever met, Sharon Marie Chester. She's amazing. She's been a social worker for over 30 years and a very prominent activist in the Black Lives Matter movement here in South Louisiana. She's a Tulane grad who actually takes care of a lot of folks on sliding scale rates over in St. Bernard Parish, where she's holding up half the sky, at least over there, in the fight for racial justice. She's so brilliant and really considerate of so many issues that I wanted to talk to her past her usual specialties of depression, anxiety, and relationship problems, which I guess everybody in the world has, about the subject of narcissism. Because it's not really what we think it is. I'm sure you're going to have to explain this to us. We always thought narcissists fell right into the pond, right? And so when he fell in the pond, it was because he was looking at his reflection and he was in love with it. But that's not exactly what narcissism is today as we understand it. So we'd like to hear a little bit about you and a little bit about what you think about narcissism and how it plays out in reality. Okay.
Okay. Thank you for that very flattering introduction. Narcissism is a quality, a characteristic that all of us have to some degree or another, but it's on a spectrum from just a feature that you have or a characteristic over, and it crosses a threshold into becoming a narcissistic personality disorder. Then it goes even further, become a malignant narcissist, which is basically a total sociopath. So there's a spectrum of, you know, narcissism from characteristics which are more workable in therapy. A true narcissistic personality disorder is not considered curable, but workable.
Is that like Trump?
Trump is a narcissistic. He's a malignant narcissist.
So he's not trainable.
Have
you ever met anybody who was trainable?
Treatable? Yes, I have worked with narcissists. But like I said, psychiatry is not a mathematical science. So how much narcissism you have is a subjective opinion. So there's not a blood test that you take that says you crossed over to being a personality disorder. But the more you're loaded up with these narcissistic features, the more difficult it is to address them. Because the most fundamental characteristic of a narcissist is they like the way they are.
So you say that every one of us is just a little bit or a lot narcissistic. How do we get that way?
I think it's just a natural, normal human characteristic, you know, that we can pick up. And it can be fed within our youth. And I think you mentioned one thing about if people in their young years are particularly abused, or if they are spoiled rotten, they can develop either certain defenses or incorporate that golden person image and use narcissistic defenses throughout life to wield their, you know, their goals.
And really, is it a separation that occurs between the personality and the core? What actually happens when someone...
We don't know. I mean, they can't figure out really what causes narcissism. And they do speculate as to whether it was, you know, early abuse and or spoil and rotten, but there's cases where that's just not necessarily the case. So people may be actually born with narcissistic personality disorder.
One would think that something happened, because, you know, we're trained to really believe that everybody has an equal chance at birth, and after
that... We are trained. We live with a lot of illusion, too.
Can you give an example of a person besides Trump, from some everyday example, who is narcissistic, and what is it like for the folks around them?
I'll bet there are just about everybody in your audience who has known a narcissist. A lot of them, narcissists draw us. They can be captivating, they can be personable, they can be intelligent, they can become celebrities. You know, a lot of our celebrities are narcissistic. Our politicians need a certain level of narcissism to be able to think they're holy enough to reach these thrones, to get into them. So, again, it's kind of a spectrum on where people land as to their prognosis and help ability.
So we're out here being attracted to people who are narcissists, and what does that impact have on us?
Let me go over who they are, okay, and that'll help, because it's a long-term pattern of abnormal behavior characterized by exaggerated feelings of self-importance, excessive need for admiration, and the most dangerous one is a lack of empathy. They spend a lot of their energies focusing on achieving attention, appearing to be better than others, popularity, and it's often based in their appearance. So there are 9 characteristics of narcissists, and they have to have 5 of these characteristics to be diagnosed with a personality disorder. Okay, and it's interesting because when we talk about the racism thing, there is a tie-in, because white folks, we carry ourselves, we were born into such privilege, and we carry ourselves in more narcissistic ways because we can afford to be blind to other people and be less empathetic than minorities. So some of these translate. So I'm going to describe these, and you can start thinking about how this relates not only to the personality disorder, but how it relates to white folks with a narcissistic, white narcissism is what I call it. Okay, the first one is they are arrogant and domineering. Okay, right there. If you look at the history of what whiteness is, it was a social construct that was totally invented for the purpose of oppressing people. And since then, we've become the deciders and definers of everything. So we decide what goes in the dictionary. For example, the definition of racism. And the definition of racism in our whitewashed, white-purposed dictionary is that it's one race thinking they are superior to the other race or opposing the other race. Functionally, that's BS, because there is no such thing as reverse racism. They don't have the political pressure, the power to manifest what real racism's genocidal components are. So, but we as white people define what is patriotic, whether taking a knee is somehow deviant. You know, we decide when what black people should be offended. I mean, we just have this, that's a narcissistic trait. Those are examples of how that goes. And that's just number one. And domineering.
So when you're talking about how white supremacy comes about, part of it is about a culture where it is seen as white people have the right and white people are superior and white people get to harm other people because of all that. So people become contorted just based on living in a society.
Yeah. I mean, we were raised from birth conditioned to think that black people were somehow inferior because they were funneled into ghettos and inner cities for decades with Jim Crow, where people couldn't even get jobs. So when white people, even unknowingly and inadvertently, pass the projects, they go, oh, who's in the projects? And they tie that up or conflate it with our bootstraps theory, which is anybody in this country can get ahead if they want to. And we tie those together and we don't realize the racist narrative that we buy into. So a lot of this is inadvertent, but we see ourselves as the default. I mean, you don't, when they talk on the news about having arrested someone, they talk about having arrested a man, Or they talk about having arrested a black man.
That's correct.
Because white is always the default. We're just supposed to be the default. And that's arrogance and dominance.
And so basically by being bent in our view of ourselves, we've lost our empathy because we're disconnected from ourselves.
Right. And the second one is grandiosity. Okay? We presume that we're better. We presume that if we have an argument with a black person, ours is the one that should dominate. You know, it's just, it's really, the grandiose, it's disgusting.
You mean the monuments are historical and therefore they're valuable? The Confederate monuments?
Well, the grandiosity is in the people who are saying, I should be the one to define whether that is heritage or horror.
And there's no empathy.
No empathy.
No,
it's the grandiosity.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is preoccupation with success and power, or being better than. So, and
so
the power.
Again, that's othering people and defining what success is. That doesn't even have anything to do with true values and character.
Oh, absolutely. Because look at the survival of the fittest. That sounds like a great theory. But look at what is the fittest right now. Greed, avarice, killing other people off, winning at the expense of others. That's what our values are turning into. So that's screwed up. And and our preoccupation with this being the fittest and winning at the expense of others is really screwing us up as far as our humanity, you know, essence. So the next one is the most dangerous, which is the lack of empathy. Because it's not detectable, necessarily. I mean, people who are not used to seeing through the BS will hear 45 go up there and say, oh, that was a terrible thing that was done to that black person. People actually buy that he means that. Well, if you know white code as well as most people don't necessarily are aware of, when he says racism is terrible, he's not talking about racism. He's also talking about Black Lives Matter as though they are racist. You need to be able to hear that.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Through its white code. So even though he can say one thing, and people buy into it, they go, oh, okay, well, he is empathetic. That's not empathy. Listen to what he means. And you'll find out there's no empathy.
He's talking to his base.
Yes. Okay, the belief of being unique. That's the next characteristic, which is I am separate than other people. And it's based on false grounds. I'm better than. I'm misunderstood. I'm different. I don't need to follow the rules.
How does a narcissist change if they actually fundamentally can't admit to a mistake?
Narcissistic personality disorders are extremely difficult, if not impossible, to treat. I've treated people with a lot of narcissism and gotten somewhere, but there is a threshold, and that's what I call in racism. There is a spectrum from ignorance to evil, okay? We are all born ignorant. We have all been conditioned with the same lies, the same racial narratives that oppress black people. We've all been, even black people, they cannot have escaped these narratives also. They've been drenched in these lies. So, forgot where I was going with it.
Well, basically, you know, if people have been drenched in the lies, they have been made separate so that it's harder for them to be in touch with their own empathy. And so this is just a conundrum.
Well, and they also see this zero-sum game on power.
Right.
You know, that instead of all, you know, all the tide lifting all boats, no, they start pitching people over the side. And they made it clear. And it's really fascinating when you look in the 1600s and 1700s, how we started putting the word white into law here. And it had to do with when so many people were coming here, the people that already arrived went, uh-oh, we need to do a power scramble for some of these dagos or you know, forget what they call Irish people, you know, are going to start taking over. So we need to define who should be in power here and who should be allowed to make the decisions and the political choices and policies and so forth. So first they went with men, of course. Then they expanded that to Christian men. And then they went to white Christian men. And it's weird because they have, for a good minute, Irish were not considered white, I mean, look at their skin color. But they were considered non-white. Italians were considered non-white. Jews were considered non-white.
Swedes.
Now, this is a good one. Mexicans have been designated white and non-white back and forth three times since 1930. The reason they changed those people to being white is when there are so many crappy jobs that no white people in America will take them, and the only white people can get jobs, so they turn Mexicans into white people so they can come fill those crappy jobs. And then when white people start wanting those crappy jobs, they designated them non-white again, kicked them all out, so white people could get them.
They did this in the census too, didn't they? Like there's a category for Spanish who are non-white.
It's absurd. This whole paradigm we've invented of race and being based, I mean, this, it's all a lie. And for us to have built, I mean, I was saying today, white people, did it ever occur to you how it has influenced your racial identity to have grown up your whole life seeing almost nothing but white people on TV? You know, imagine if you had grown up in the 1950s and 60s and everybody on TV was black. Can you even begin to imagine?
I think they're grappling with this in New Zealand with the Maori people. And they actually have made some great inroads simply by interpreting all their signs into Maori and English. So
wow.
You have this visible, constant presence. It'd be interesting to see what that would be like if our signs had even one of the, you know, American Indian languages interpreted there along with, like Swahili, for instance.
Yeah.
What presence that would bring to legitimizing exactly who the people are who are here.
Yeah. Well, we're still busy oppressing them, so. Let me go with the last ones. The one that is one of my most hard things to cope with in my private practice is the sense of entitlement. That's an ugly thing. That's because the rules do not necessarily apply to me. And if they apply to me, I don't like them. I'm just going to change them. And this is where we have a whole lot of politicians, especially white politicians, especially Republican white politicians, who have started disregarding rules of law, you know, based on their sense of entitlement and what is best for everybody. And that's not like the trickle-down economics. It's like, now, I'm entitled to my tax cut of, you know, my billionaire income, and we'll just pretend that all this is going to trickle down to, no, that's entitlement.
Yeah, you see this with the corporations and even with like the NFL. You saw the guy, the head of the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, running prostitution. No telling what they're going to find out about that.
And that guy in what, Miami? And somebody, one of 45's appointees.
Right.
Covered him for.
Oh, yeah.
Screwing little baby girls? I mean, oh my God.
This is part of entitlement, right?
They could just get away with it, because if you have money, you can buy justice here.
Interjew's done the same thing here locally. They actually have ads that have the word rate reduction in them, but they're actually angling for a rate increase. They're just entitled to lie to us in a very Orwellian way.
Right. And that's what's going on at the highest level of our office.
And then
lying to us in an Orwellian way. It's like, oh my God.
Right, and their PACs just donate to the people who make the decisions about allowing the rate increase. So here we are with, you know, higher rates than ever and bad service and all those entitled executives who act like we don't even have a right to challenge them, and the newspaper covers it like we're not there.
Yeah. That's entitlement. Okay, the last ones are they require excessive admiration. And they do not take humiliation well at all. They will battle you. They are exploitive. Okay, white supremacy. We have kidnapped, plundered, raped, tortured, lynched, murdered, and villainized our victims. Okay, that's exploitive. So that's white supremacy, that's a narcissism. And then being envious of others. It's like, it's so annoying to me to hear white people say, well, they get all the scholarships, they get all the jobs. It's like they're envious over BS. It's a lie. So that's your nine characteristics.
That's
pretty nasty people.
How many do you have to be a narcissist?
Five
of the nine?
Yeah.
So basically, during the heroic civil rights movement, there was a lot of conflict, whether it was the white supremacists who were fighting to keep things the way that they were because they wanted to continue to injure black people. I think that's clear.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we had the conflict of people who were rising up and saying, you know, we just want equality and we're going to fight for it.
Yeah.
So there was a conflict that was going on in our society. And that made such a great change that it spawned, you know, other movements, the women's movement, the gay rights movement,
mm-hmm.
even senior citizens to be treated with dignity and children's rights, people with disabilities fought for their rights. It spawned all these movements for change because it was such a magnificent and heroic and wonderful struggle and so successful.
But then I think we dropped the ball.
Well, what does it look like today in terms of fighting? Are we looking at another civil rights era when people just need to be in the streets and need to be protesting and targeting specific agencies and individuals who are actually narcissistic and hurting people to their gain?
You know what I call a civil rights movement? Practice. Okay. We got it started, but we didn't follow through in the political policies, in the economic practices, in the deinstitutionalization of racism. Okay, all we did was we started up a process, and then it ground to a halt when everybody got complacent.
Do you really think it was complacency? Do you think people actually believe that passing the civil rights legislation meant that the law would be put into force and people would actually
exactly.
be treated properly?
That's why they got complacent. Because they assumed that this was going to roll into not gerrymandering, not murdering black men who are unarmed by our police department. People just assumed that we were going to roll into actual civil human rights. And instead, you know, it kind of went underground. You know, there's a really awesome four-disc series. And I made the dumb mistake of loaning it out. But it's called Slavery and the Making of America. It's a PBS series. It should be mandatory viewing for every middle schooler in this country. But it shows you how in our history that people of color have risen to levels of power that would shock people today. And that every time they rose to any kind of position of political power, there was a recoil and a huge backlash from white people. One was the KKK, and one was Trump. He was the recoil for Obama that people should have expected, because if we look at this, if you study our history and what happens, he was the absolute predictable countermeasure to people trying to get black people back under control in this country.
Similar backlash against the women's movement.
Yes.
And that continues with the fights against Planned Parenthood and funding for any of their programs.
Well, and the Kavanaugh thing was a nightmare. It was just a nightmare. And it shows you that his assholishness entitlement is thriving and alive and well in the highest places.
Yes, that we can actually have a rapist on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, how about that?
If he's not the first one.
No, probably not, but he's at least out loud about it.
Yeah, well, we are talking about racism and misogyny here as a consequence of narcissism, which is in many cases manifested in just basic straight up white supremacy. And do you think that this abiding hidden individual behavior of narcissism is evidenced in the constancy of white supremacy?
Definitely. And as I mentioned, that spectrum from ignorance to evil, the threshold into evil is willful ignorance. Okay, we're all ignorant. We all need to be unconditioned in our racism and educated in our racial literacy trajectory. But there are those who come to a point where they say, I just don't like that narrative. I like the one that keeps my privilege intact. And so I don't want to hear what you have to say.
Is that fear?
Partly fear. It's partly greed. You know, it's
Partly people are separated from their souls, really.
It's self-centeredness. But it's not, it's, you know, I did a meme today about liberation and how our liberation is tied up with theirs because we are tying them to the ground.
Yes, that's fundamentally correct. Yeah, people are not free if they're hating and tied up in negativity.
Right. We are the monster. We cannot be freed until we stop oppressing and become aware of it and make daily applications to it.
Do you think that school children should be taught psychology so that they can learn some basic principles? Because I don't think that actually happens.
Not psychology, but they need to be taught about racism. Right from the get-go. I mean, the fact that they're still doing kindergarten children, the doll tests are still exactly the same they were as before. What, Brown? What was the school board one? Yeah, that one. You know, once they did that doll test where all the children were saying the black doll is ugly, the white doll is smart, but, and these are children who are integrating this. And for that reason, they realized, oh, this keeping these schools separated might be hurting these black kids, so we're going to integrate them. Well, that was a huge cluster poop, but
not everywhere. Every now and then you hear about some isolated place where they actually integrated the schools and everything was fine, so we know it could have worked.
Small miracles.
Yeah, we know it could have worked, and just that.
Well, that was the white flight out of St. Bernard Parish.
Right.
They went to Covington because they were not going to raise their children in a place where they had to go to school with black people.
Well, they must have opened up some houses for people from the Northland because, you know, people from the Northland did go to St. Bernard.
Well, then the blood ordinance, you know, you heard about that. The St. Bernard Parish Council met for the first time after Hurricane Katrina. Now, there were no lights. There were no, you know, there was no water. There were many deaths. This was a horrific catastrophe. They don't address the lights. They don't address the water. The very first meeting what they attended to is making an ordinance that no one was allowed to rent property in the parish who did not have a blood relative. Now, 95% of St. Bernard Parish at that time was white, and 95% of the accompanying, adjoining parish, or Ninth Ward, basically, was 95% black at that time. It was very clear what the motivation was for that. We want to be here. We deserve to be here. You black people do not stay out. We will make sure, and we'll put it in policy. Now, fortunately, the feds came after him and made him undo it. So now it's not in writing.
St. Bernard Parish is a very interesting place for its history, including the massacre that happened there. What happened with that?
1868, the St. Bernard Massacre, one of the best kept secrets, as many massacres of black people are, where Judge Philip Toka ordered it was 6 years after emancipation. And Judge Toka heard about a falsified uprising and sent the police department out to basically massacre people. They think as many as 200 black people died at the hands of those people.
And they took their land, didn't they? Their homes, their businesses?
Yeah, that's been ongoing.
That seems to be a part of the massacres, is that there's an economic benefit. And that was true when during the Holocaust as well.
Right. Oh, yeah.
The neighbors could loot the houses and take the property and the businesses.
And St. Bernard Parish, and I mean, 70% of St. Bernard Parish voted for David Duke for governor. 70%.
That ratio must be diminished now since the parish is more significantly, percentage-wise, black than it was before.
They stay in their place. So I don't think it's changed a lot, but I do see some millennium types starting to bubble up to the surface on some white woke folks becoming more conscious and more vocal, even though they started very nervous and I ran a few off, you know.
But do you think that they are white supremacists?
We all are white supremacists. I'm a white supremacist in recovery. I can't shed it if I wanted to. I walk in and I'm privileged. I walk into a bank, they're going to look at me differently than they look at a black person. That's how supremacy works. I'm going to benefit from that till the day I die.
Does anybody teach this anywhere?
That's what we need to be doing in the little school. We need to be teaching this in like I said, from kindergarten, if these children are still being affected, and that's before they even reach kindergarten, and they're still being infected with racism, we need to get to these kids earlier. I mean, I have a problem with the color of Band-Aids. These babies, we're putting that pink thing on these little black children. What do you think that says to them? You're deviant. This is the color you're supposed to be. We need to be more mindful about the subconscious ways, and our media is really doing a mess of conveying that white supremacy should stand.
What do you think about, you know, other states that have other populations that are people of color? You know, whether it's Mexican Americans or Native Americans.
Well, Texas is a real mess right now. Texas is an interesting study because that's really regressed racially, even worse than Louisiana in some ways. McGraw-Hill writes all the acceptable children's books. In Texas, they were going to take, and I think they may have, successfully removed Jim Crow out of the history books. Are you serious? Our history books are so filled with lies.
I've been listening to A Community Voice on WAMFLP New Orleans on 90.3 FM and streaming at WAMF.org. WAMF is an all-volunteer, non-commercial radio station, so if you would like to volunteer to host your own show, please give us a call at 504-605-0746 or drop us a line at WAMF.org.